Welcome to Truest Blood, the official True Blood podcast.
I'm Kristen Bauer.
And I'm Deborah Ann Wohl.
And you've been invited in. I want to do bad things with you.
Welcome back to Truest Blood, where we sink our fangs into the series bite by bite.
This week, it is all about fashion. We get to talk with the incredible Audrey Fisher, the artist behind every piece of clothing on the screen. Even with the regular state of undress on the show, it was still an enormous job to clothe everyone each week.
Yeah, I mean, our cast list, I mean, it must have been hundreds of performers every single episode.
Yes. And for Pam, hair and makeup and wardrobe was huge, huge, huge. But first, let's have a quick bite. How to look like a True Blood vampire. Step one, subtlety is key. If your look screams vampire, you'll just scare all those pretty little breathers away.
Step two, no added chemicals. While True Blood vampires may not be cruelty-free, they are prosthetic-free. No pointed ears, bumpy noses, or droopy faces here. Unless, of course, they got hold of by a witch.
Step three, lightly corpseify. Use cranberry eyeshadow to rim the eyes and aged blood illustrator to rim the nail beds. Then cover up that pesky human flush with a perfectly matched foundation. This is undead chic at its best.
Step four, rule of cool. Leave that dewy look for the warm-blooded. When you don't sweat and your heart don't beat, best powder yourself down for a matte look.
Step five, when you're all done for the night, grab the set favorite, Dermalogica Pre-Cleanse. Hashtag not sponsored, and wipe it all away with a warm towel. Otherwise, you'll find folks at the checkout line the next day wondering if the morgue is missing a body.
Or alternatively, you could hire the exceptional makeup artist and head of the makeup department for all 7 years of the series, Bridget Ellis, who flawlessly captured both the supernatural and the au naturel looks the show required.
Audrey Fisher has to have been one of the most influential, creative, kind costumers that we have ever worked with. She was actually born in Germany, but she studied at NYU's Tisch School of the Arts. She's worked in costumes and theater all the way from Austria to LA, just across the map.
Yep, and then she jumped into television. She cut her cloth on the fabulous production of That 70s so Show. True Blood was actually her first show as head costume designer. She was with us for all 7 years. And of course, now she's sought after. She moved on to Man in the High Castle, Barry, Love and Death, great to just shows. Mention only a few. She's also a cat mom. I'm going to cry. A wife and just one of my favorite people. Audrey!
Hi!
Hi!
Yes.
Start the tear train.
I know. We had to make sure everyone had tissues before we even started our recording with Audrey.
Seriously.
I'm realizing it's like, well, I knew this, but as I go to talk about it, it's such a close relationship that I have with you and Pam and True Blood, right? It's just, right?
Yeah.
Audrey would always notice that I say that a lot, right?
Right.
Well, it's interesting because I think when we talk about like interdepartmental relationships and friendships and things, there are certain departments that like never cross, you know? And then others where you would meet with every single cast member and potentially, I mean, every director, every writer, and potentially a lot of other departments every episode, multiple times, costumes really being one of the most infectious, maybe, departments in a TV show.
Yeah, you're right. Now that I think about it, we're one of the only department heads that really goes into all spheres.
Yeah.
and gets to meet all of the actors, obviously, and sort of interact intensely, more intensely with some, you know, more casually with others. But yeah, we're really in the room with everyone all the time. Suzuki Ingerslev, you know, we've been hanging out recently because we just did our last project together. And she's always saying to me, I mean, I'm always realizing how little she has to do with the actors.
Yes.
And it always blows my mind.
We spoke with her. Yeah. And we were like, we don't really know you, you know, as much as even though we shared the show together. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's sort of hard for me to understand that, you know, because for me, nothing goes without a very intimate relationship with every actor, which is incredible for me. Yeah. And it is it is to see you, both of you. It just immediately takes me back to all those times just walking into the fitting room. And I mean, how many fittings? I don't even know how many fittings. I mean,
we wondered if you had stats like that, you know, like
we did dozens. One for every episode. Very conservatively, but we didn't do one for every episode. We did multiple, which is one of my questions later. Okay. So
let's start where we usually start, which is, how did you get the job? Mm-hmm. How did you join the True Blood universe?
Okay. How did I get the job? That's a great story. And I've really enjoyed listening to everyone else's stories. Mm-hmm. So my story, you might have heard before. So the first job I had in, 2000 was on That 70s Show as an assistant designer. Yeah. maybe it was a couple years later. Anyway, I assistant designed. It was my first big like Hollywood costume job. I had come from theater at the Mark Taper Forum I'd been working, and previously in New York, I had been designing little tiny shows. So I got the job with Melina Root, incredible designer. And then I went on to two seasons of that. And then we did another very wonderful, but not very, it didn't have much of a life, That 80s Show, which was so awesome. That was 1 year. And anyway, it was at the end of That 70s Show that all the stock was being sold. And Danny Glicker is an incredible costume designer, dear friend. He had come to check out the stock, the 70s stock, because he was doing a movie called We Are Marshall, which you might know, remember, Matthew McConaughey. It's like a football kind of drama. So he came to meet with us and look at the stock, and he and I immediately vibed. And I was wearing like a dashiki, and my hair was really big. And he was like, I need this person on this next 70s project with me. And, you know, he knew that I had this intimate knowledge of this stock, and the stock was incredible. Anyway, so he basically offered me the job, and I went off to do my first big movie. And then it was after We Are Marshall that he got True Blood. So he had been worked with Alan Ball on Towelhead. And then Alan was like, I'm doing this crazy vampire thing. Do you want to come do the pilot? You know, and Danny was totally interested. And it was a sort of logical progression for me to assist him. So we started the show, and it was amazing. And I got to know Anna and the Merlot's t-shirts and, you know, all this like amazing early stuff. And we were at the lot that's like where Lucille Ball did everything. It's over there. I can't remember the name of that lot, but it's the one that's east of Highland.
Yes. I was going to say.
Yes.
Central?
I can't remember either.
Studios or something like that?
It's changed names. Okay. Anyway, so we started out there. Yeah. It was very cramped. It was totally, you know, it was really like by the seat of our pants. And so I got to know everyone. It was great. And it was like crazy and busy. And we were going along. And guess what? The strike.
Yeah.
The first strike happened.
WJ.
So after the pilot, then we came back and we did 1, 2, and I think 3, and then strike.
Right.
And everything shut down, and it was like, whoa, what's going to happen? And then basically during the strike, Danny was offered Milk, the movie Milk. And he was able to take it because I don't know why, but it was in San Francisco. So he essentially went to do Milk and basically pitched to Alan that I take over the show.
Wow.
And I was like blown away, so honored, so scared, so thrilled. Yeah. And Alan said, sure. You know, that was the most, that was the kind of the most beautiful part, was that Danny had given me that sort of like, you know, alley-oop.
Right.
And then Alan rubber stamped it. And suddenly, you know, we came back from the strike and I was the designer. And then I basically, you know, it was my baby from that point on. And I stayed on till, you know, the whole thing, because it was such a, you know, it had represented such a major break in my career. And it sort of got me into this position, you know, as the head designer. So that's how I did it. So I was there from the beginning and sort of, took over starting episode 4, I'm pretty sure, season 1.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah, because that's when I started.
Right.
You had the same episode.
Right?
Yes. Right. In Long Beach at Fantasia, when we put you on that roller thing.
And your
dolly truck.
Yes. And I put you in that giant corset, like it was like 3 feet long, and lace. And you were such a champ. And you were literally like, except for when the camera went on, you were a zombie because you had just come back from where? Malaysia?
The Philippines, right?
Philippines.
That's your story.
Philippines?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the Philippines. Like, I was a zombie.
Yeah. I mean, except for you were telling me you were a zombie, but you were still completely there for the fitting and completely like there for everything that happened, but you were saying you were a zombie.
And then I had to get on this skateboard. It was the first time we tried to make vampires fly, and it really was not successful. They edited that down to
Everyone was learning. 1.7 seconds. Yeah, we were all learning. We were evolving as the time goes on. Yeah.
Yeah, and Eric still had that wig.
Yep.
Yes. Because that was his first night, too. We started on the same night.
Well, that's amazing. And I'm sort of curious about like establishing a character's look and then evolving that over seasons. Because what an interesting experience to work on so many characters over such a long, I mean, you're lucky to get a show that lasts 7 years, period.
I mean,
but much less one that had these kinds of resources. So, you know, we're talking about looks that were established with you and a partner that you're then taking on and making your own. And how does, so how does that process go over the years?
Yeah, I mean, the good thing about, you know, sort of a multi-episode, multi-season show like True Blood is that there are so many storylines that are yet to develop. Like, for instance, you know, Kristen, it's a great example. Like, Pam was completely your and my sort of collaboration, right? So
big time.
That was something we started. Mm-hmm. And also Eric, I guess, right? I guess Eric was also episode 4. So what's beautiful as a designer and as assisting for a previous designer and then becoming the designer, it's sort of like he started it and I was able to sort of run the ball down the field, but also deal with so many other exciting new characters that went into so many strange new storylines, you know, everything. Mm-hmm. I mean, True Blood is sort of a dream job because you got to, you know, I got to do medieval times. I got to do like prehistory. I got to do the 1880s. I got to do the 30s. I mean, it was little bites, but still. Right. So
interestingly,
I guess,
maybe not the 1970s again, even though that was
where
you kind of come out. Funny.
That's right. We never did the 70s. That's interesting. But yeah, I think that when you have a designer who passes off a project, it requires a sort of lovely connection between the two of you. And he trusted me to sort of carry on his vision. And he knew that I would bring my own. So, you know, it's kind of like the perfect, it's like the perfect gift to me. And also the fact that he developed so many of the, you know, the cornerstones of the looks that I got to carry on. I don't know. It's just a wonderful, and we're still besties, you know, so we talk almost every day.
And the fact that Alan said, sure. I mean, that is, we hear that from everybody, that there was this enormous trust to create is staggering. And do you feel that relationship was different on this show than other shows where you're sending pictures? So, right, we have the wardrobe fitting, we take pictures, we laugh a lot.
Yeah.
We had so much freaking fun in that, because I have so many things to say, but one of them is that Pam without Audrey Fisher is a different Pam.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's like, I mean, come on. I mean, that Pam, I think you're the largest contributor to my creating that character. And well, and how does that work? So you have the fitting. We would have multiple fittings. So that's another question I have. But how does that work? We take pictures and then you send it up the line to the director and the producer and Alan. And how is that different on this show than other shows?
So much. So much in there. So much good stuff in there. Okay, let me take it back to Alan saying, sure. I mean, to me, that is, that really speaks to the uniqueness of True Blood and the fact that this all was happening, you know, in what, 2007, 2006, you know, that we started so long ago. And also the fact, like, I don't know about you two, but I look back and I think an in-town show for seven years. And I'm like, that was like, I cut my teeth on this miracle. And how magical that we all got to go home every night and have these beautiful, I mean, I usually took the summer kind of off because I knew I'd work. I worked my butt off. I had, you know, money saved up. I was able to take a break. You know, maybe I did a pilot, whatever, but then I could go back to work. It was almost like a school schedule. I mean, I dream of this now. The minute I left our show, suddenly I was in Vancouver and Thailand and Hawaii and Texas. And while that sounds great, it, as we all know, it's so challenging for life. So yeah, I have to say, I think working with Alan, he's sort of a, he's an unusual, and I think not very, a person like a sort of creator and showrunner like him is sort of one of a kind. And I feel like is from a previous time in production because he had so much control. He had so much trust from the studio, right? From HBO. He was like a mega hit maker. And then we had all of these amazing kind of names coming together, incredible actors and incredible designers. And everyone was like at the top of their game. And he just like let everyone run and do their thing. And the fact that he loved Danny and the fact that he saw, I mean, he saw how hard I worked and then he saw how well Danny and I collaborated. And so when Danny said, I really trust this person to take over, it's like, it's such a natural, it almost sounds like a friend relationship, right? Where he would say, okay. And somehow, I don't even know how that worked, but I think he just informed HBO that's what was happening.
I love it.
Like, nowadays that would never, I mean, it would be, it would be so many like meetings and concept meetings and you'd have to present and you'd have to do this, like just that kind of simple handshake and handoff. Astonishing. And I'm so, I feel very fortunate that I was able to experience that. And then I have to say that sort of largesse of, Alan's extended to the way that he show ran. So, that's another reason that I've sort of been ruined by Alan because
we've all been ruined.
I know, because the way that it worked with Alan was that he was just the top of the pyramid. So I would, you know, at the beginning of every season, I would get the scripts and I would kind of make, I don't know if we all got all the scripts at one time. So I got as many scripts as we had and I would make sort of mood boards for each character based on some of the big events that were unfolding in the scripts. And I think usually there was sort of like maybe a Bible that sort of gave you a sense of the way that it would unfold, the season would unfold. So you had a sort of sense of the highlights. So I'd make mood boards on boards, like cutting, Xeroxing, printing, running out of ink, cutting, scissors had to be sharp.
Magazines.
Yes. Magazines.
Inspirational like, quotes.
Yeah. Like old school. And I remember glue sticks running out. Glue sticks running out and putting different heads on different bodies if I didn't like, you know. And then I would walk over with giant boards. I remember walking across the lot, like in the wind with the boards, and I would get help from my PA. And then he would set aside, you know, a chunk of time for me. It's not like I had 10 minutes. I had like an hour. And we would basically talk through every character, and he would look at the boards and he'd be like, yeah, that looks good. Yeah, I like that. You know, there was honestly, it was so rare that he said, I'm not sure that feels right to me. Mm. And that's how he would say, I don't like it. He would never say, I don't really like that. He would say, I'm not sure that feels right to me for the character. Wow. Like, it was so elegant and so kind. So and it really, elegant. To me, always made me feel like it was, he was saying like, thank you for this perspective. Yeah. I really thank you for all this work you've done. That doesn't resonate for me. Can we look in another direction? Right? It's like the way that you always wish to be spoken to as a professional who's bringing your heart to this every meeting.
Yes.
So after that meeting with him, I sort of felt like it was a conversation that he and I were having about each character. And then, you know, the sort of next conversation partner was y'all, you know, walking into the room. So I would go out and like get everything I needed for every fitting. And you know how I work. I sort of got lots of great choices and lots of sizes. And that's how I feel you can have the most efficient experience together. And I want to make everyone feel like there's really a lot of choices and we're going to have a lot of fun. And so, you know, then you all would walk in the room. And that's when really we would do that alchemy of making, even if it's in the back of the truck, Deborah Ann, our first fitting was in the back of the truck, which to me was like, that's how I never want to do it. Like, I want to make a beautiful, peaceful, you know, setting where everyone feels great. And it's like, this one marched into the back of the truck. We pulled a little curtain and we did it. And anyway, so, you know, you can also do it in these kind of like less than wonderful conditions, right? That alchemy can still
happen. I got
the full
treatment down the line. It's all good.
Down the line. Yeah. So after having the fitting and really getting to know, you know, what worked and kind of what resonated for the actor in the room, and also thinking about the action, right? Like Kristen, with your corsets, we would have to decide, could you breathe in it? What were you going to do? The shoes, could you walk in it? What was
could
possible?
You stand on wet sod in stilettos?
Right. I know we never really nailed that. And I feel like there's new things now, you know, for that, like putting, anyway, there's all kinds of new like heel devices.
Oh, really?
And I'm sure, Deborah, there's all kinds of weird, like clear plastic platforms that has a hole for the heel. And
it's amazing.
Anyway, and Deborah, I'm sure there's times where you and I were figuring out, like, are my boobs going to pop out? Or, you know, can I lift my arms? Mm-hmm. Can I scream? Yeah. Like, can I run? Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, so is it going to get dirty? Is it going to get bloody? Is it going to get ripped? Is it going to, you know?
Yeah. Do I have to
How
rip
many
it?
Of these can right? we get? Right.
Yeah. How many can we get?
Oh my God.
These questions, you know?
So yeah, I learned, I mean, that was such a huge lesson, but anyway, so then that's a whole other, conversation.
Get in that.
Oh my God. Anyway, so I would take the pictures with the camera, then print them out. Right. I had to have those little like photo printers. So I think we figured out how to do it then, you know, slowly we got better. And then eventually I think it was on the phone, but in the beginning it was printing things out, making a board, and either and then taking them to Alan, and he would approve them in person. And then I quickly realized it was easiest for us because we had such a good kind of way of communicating. I could email the pictures and he was okay with that. So we could speed it up.
Okay.
But what I want to tell you is that he would basically say, love it. That's how he would approve. I would say, what do you think about this for, you know, like, Pam, when she goes to the brothel and whatever, love it. That's it.
Wow.
And if he wasn't sure, he'd say, you know what? I think maybe we should try whatever. And that was maybe 1 out of 20 responses. Mm. So most of the time I was getting this incredibly wonderful, solid, totally kind feedback. Love it. Love it. Love it. Love it. So it was just like, I felt so... Right? It just makes you feel so wonderful and
when you tell me,
so appreciated.
That would make me feel, it would make me feel brave too, right?
Also,
like if I felt like I'm likely to get a good response or at least a compassionate no, I might try more risky things or like push my own boundaries. And
that's exactly how
positive reinforcement can really bring out the best in your team rather than what so many leaders use, which is negative nitpicking.
Right. Or, you know, one of my least favorite, the worst kind of feedback I ever got was, I don't hate it.
Right.
Like, what?
So what do I do with that?
Why did you say the H word then?
And I remember when that happened with that particular, you know, it was a theater director. Yeah. I also thought it was just, he was just being sassy. Like he didn't hate it at all. He thought it was fine. He wanted some other choices, but that was just his kind of like new nitty kind of bossy way of being like, okay, it's fine. Instead of just saying, yeah, that looks good. I'm not sure, but okay. I don't hate it. I always remember that as a lesson, like how not to respond to someone who's bringing you a creative option.
So
the way that I got it done with Alan, especially effectively and efficiently, and this is what I always try to recreate in all my other jobs since then, is I would take the love it and I would forward it in an attachment with the attachment of the photos to the next like people. So basically it would go from love it, Alan, forward, you know, to whoever the director was, like, hey guys, check this out. And it would have the, see, like, see attached, Alan's happy. And it would say, Alan, love it. And then the picture. So I sort of used that as a banner, like, hey, look, he loves it. Right. And it was rare that I would ever get any negative feedback after people realized that he had already given such a sound approval. And that made everything go much faster because I didn't, And it was just like my little thing that I did where I just forwarded with his comment, because it's different than saying, Alan loves it. When you see Alan's email attached, it says love it. Then you're like, okay, well.
Well, now you all have something to rally behind. You all have a, you know, a vision that maybe originated with you that is then approved by Alan that now others can build off of.
Exactly.
Which is kind of goes to my next point, which is we start to see as the seasons go on more and more, especially with Pam, plot points revolving around the clothes. So the writers are writing to, you know, outfits that Pam might wear or Lafayette or, you know, these iconic things, and how cool that must be to like read a script and be like, oh, they gave me a moment, you know,
how
fun.
Yes. And you know, who was really the king of that? Alex Wu.
Yeah.
Right. He would actually call me. And of course we worked into that relationship, but you know, he's got that kind of brain where he wants to know what it is before he really writes too much about it. So he would get an idea and then he'd call me and say, so, you know, if Pam were to, you know, and he'd start talking about the scene and he wanted a certain outfit or a certain color and whatever, and we'd talk it out. And that to me was also so respectful that he would take the time to actually ask the costume designer how this might look so that I didn't have to read it. Like read something that didn't really make sense and then try to figure it out later and have to go back to him. Like he just set it up beautifully so that we could collaborate early on. And then I could already start looking for that, for instance, if it was something really unusual or special, I could already start figuring it out, like, you know, weeks in advance, which of course, as you all know, is like, that's it. Like having time to get these things done.
Yeah, that really never happens that I've seen before or since is... that amount of time that we had with the scripts, and we could have, we would have a glove fitting for Pam. We would just try on gloves at this one fitting.
Just gloves.
And that, right? We would have a jewelry fitting. We would get to have multiple fittings for that masterpiece
dreamy.
That we would create. Dreamy. That just, that amount of time and ruminating in our heads about what was to come was so special. And
take me back.
I know. Take us back, please. I'm clicking my heels right now. I mean, this is a question people ask me. What's your favorite line from 7 years, which is impossible? And I'm about to do this to you.
I know.
But are there like things that stand out in your mind as like, oh my God, that was hell, man, that was, I really learned a tough lesson, that costume, you know, or fabulous ones that you're like, I'm still awfully proud of that thing.
I have a couple to jog your memory if you need it, but
yeah,
I'll start with you.
Okay. See, much like you just said, it's so hard to, I mean, my mind just races with so many, there's so many, and there's so many funny stories, and there's so many like oopsies. And Mm-hmm. Oh my God's amazings. And, you know, it's just like a sea mm-hmm. of memories. It's like an acid yeah. flashback. Like I was going to say, I went through, you know, Reddit is always hilarious for
yes.
like best, right?
Yes.
Best right. Pam outfits.
Right.
Best Jessica outfits. And like, there are unbelievable collages. Like I came across one, it's 9 pages
oh
of
God.
Like a grid of 12 color coordinated. Oh so it was God. Like, all the oh. pink outfits, all the yellow outfits, all the red outfits. And that really got
that
me going.
Like, Audrey, to look at that and be like, somebody loves my work and is so inspired by it that they took that time.
It's just
I'm not in the least surprised, you know, that someone would do that with this show because of just the quality of it. But
It is amazing. It is yeah. the best. I don't know even how. I'll start crying. I don't even know how to talk about it because it's so incredible and surreal and yeah. to like look at those mm-hmm. 9 pages and be like, oh my God, like, and that's only a minute, you know, a tiny bit of like everything. Anyway, no, it's amazing to have mm-hmm. that kind of response to what yeah. we all did together is so
yeah.
joyful. And I still get emails from people about costumes and like, where did you get this? Or I love that, mm-hmm. or I want this mm-hmm. for my wedding, or it's still.
Yeah.
And honestly, whenever I meet new friends or get to know people or I'm at a, like a work event, I swear to God, when I say, so they're like, so what have you done? You know, and you start saying some things and it's kind of awkward. And then I'm like, well, I'm True Blood. And they're like, right. Cause it's, you know, it's been a while. So it's like, I sometimes kind of wait and then I feel like, I'm going to say it because, and then it's always like this huge, lovely reaction.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
A little side thing, because it just started airing on Netflix, I just yeah. read that True Blood is now like in the top 10 worldwide watch shows on Netflix right now.
Wow.
So it has these resurgences and these ups and downs. And, you know, I'll go a long time without anybody ever recognizing me or asking about True Blood. And then all of a sudden it'll be like 1 week, a whole bunch. And it's
yeah.
because of some trend yeah. like that, you know, some algorithm decided that it's time for True Blood to be watched again.
Yeah. I think it's time for me to rewatch. I mean, I find it like, I'm sure for you both, isn't it sort of like an acid trip when you watch something that you've been in or worked on? Like, it's almost impossible yeah. to watch it. Yeah. Maybe now. Yeah. But
well,
like
we're
me,
doing it for yeah. the first time now. It's oh, not yeah. easier.
Right.
It's not
it's
easy.
It's easier.
I remember you guys saying that.
It's easier now. Yeah. And I do find myself, because I'm supposed to be taking notes. I'm supposed to be mm-hmm. working. And then yeah. 20 minutes will go by and I'm just sitting there like, you know, watching TV, enjoying myself. So,
right.
So you can, usually when I come back on screen is when I'm like, no, okay, I'm supposed to be working.
Right.
Right. But I'm constantly, I mean, Audrey, Pam and you and me, we just had a freaking yeah. ball. There's so much that was so specific about it. There yeah. was never an earring, a ring. I'm trying to think of like the smaller things that you didn't have put so much thought into. And the red leather dress you got on eBay, mm-hmm. right? Like
yeah.
you found
the jumpsuit,
that
right?
Sequin jumpsuit.
The sequin jumpsuit. That's on my list of iconic ones too.
Can we say what that was?
Please.
Because it was you,
yeah.
you executed this incredible knockoff basically, right?
Right. Right. That actually, that's one of my faves. Yeah, because it was a YSL. It was in the magazines. It was in all the fashion magazines.
Oh.
This extraordinary YSL. It was on all the ads. This beautiful. It was exactly, right? A red sequin, V-neck, black yeah. velvet bow, sort of like a tapered leg. And I was obsessed with it. And I had to make it for you. And we found this beautiful Marc Jacobs fabric. And it looks so incredible on you. And I can't remember who made it. I feel like we had to get someone special in to do it because we didn't have enough time in the workroom. So I think Henry came in. Anyway, so another amazing cutter fitter came
remember.
In and did it.
Yeah.
Anyway, you looked extraordinary in it. Mm-hmm. And then we got those big, crazy chandelier earrings, those red, big red rhinestones. And a couple of months later, I got a call from YSL. and they asked me, they were like, hey, we saw the show and you started to say, we were so happy that you were able to use the, you know, was that our, was that our jumpsuit? It looked so amazing. And I was like, well, you know, and I think I called legal before I called them back.
Yeah.
Because I was like, what can I say here? And they were like, it's okay because, you know, you better have made changes enough. And better. I mean, I think it looked pretty identical, but then I just said it. I said, yeah, you know, actually, I wish we had the kind of budget so we could have gone and bought a jumpsuit. I looked into it. There wasn't one available. And so I went and I found something similar. And I'm so happy that you like how it looks. And we had a great time doing it. And
that I fooled you. Yeah.
Kristen loved it and everyone loved it. Anyway.
Sam Trammell is still talking about it.
Yeah. It's his favorite look from the show.
Oh my God.
It's his favorite look from the whole show. He brings it up every few years. Because that was the scene I was in with him. He was mesmerized.
Well. And I was going to say, that's the perfect segue because both of you ladies are mesmerizing and both of you have this, you know, you have this really incredible relationship with the costumes and like how you wear them and how you relate to them and what they mean to you and how much they bring you into character. And I just feel like both of you kind of offered me this amazing playground, you know, of totally trusting me and being, you know, really open to all the crazy stuff that it brought in the room. And, you know, we developed this wonderful, I don't know, just this wonderful sense of play around the look that we had to achieve. And that is also very special to me. Like that's not, you don't get that all the time to have have two actors who are so just into it. And like loving it and digging it and walking in the room and being like, oh my God, like joyful. Like that's also, that allowed me to do it the way I wanted to do it with you guys, because you were there for it. I could bring all those crazy things in and get really nuts about it and obsess about the earrings because I knew you would enjoy it and love it. And it would mean even more.
Well, I think even just bringing up those, you know, the examples of Pam's outfits versus Jessica's outfits kind of comes to my next question, which is the range, right? What you're doing. Because obviously Pam is designer and thoughtful, curated pieces. And then you have Jessica, who's basically in hand-me-downs or whatever Bill can find. Or I remembered at one point you described it to me. Which I've never forgotten as Walmart chic. So the idea being that it's something you could buy off the rack.
Right.
But we were going to tailor it and accessorize it so that it looked cute for TV in the way that we needed it to. But I love that idea of like really having us wear things that people living in Bon Temps would have access to. And keeping that facet of realism, even in a fantasy show, kind of going. Yeah.
Yes, that was always important to me and to Danny. And we both, that's sort of both something that we carry out in our other, you know, design lives too. That always feels important to me. I mean, I know you there's times where you just can't, you have to veer off the road. You know, you have to get the $500 pair of jeans. You can't wear the Walmart jean. You have to get the very expensive jean and make it, you know, there's times where that happens, but it's sort of ideally, it is fun to use the things that the actual character would have access to. And then for Pam, of course, that's literally anything, right? It's like, it could be 500 years old. It could be couture. Right. It could be like, you know, some lady she ate and then stole her jewelry. You know, it's like, it's anything really.
Speaking of things that are old, and we're talking to you in season 4, but we do have coming up my flashbacks to when I was made.
Yes.
And
so yes, historical.
That was all like so important to me. And you, we had multiple fittings for that. We went to the Western costume and we got original vintage. You also made that first time we see her, I believe, that whole outfit was constructed and you picked all the fabrics and the layer. I mean, it was an incredible piece.
Thank you. Yeah, that was a beautiful, and the hat, I remember working on that hat the night before, I remember sitting on the ground and making the hat, and then we had to make a multiple, so one of the costumers Elizabeth, she sat with me, and it was actually really one. It's a wonderful memory. We like sat there at 10 p.m. sewing on the feathers, and right, because you had this little amazing little right burgundy sort of feathered hat. And you know, my background is also in millinery, so it was like a very it was a very soothing thing for me to do the night before because I was so excited, and then to be able to put the final touches on the hat really felt like the special kind of crowning thing. But yeah, I mean, the ability to build a whole historical look like that is astonishing, you know, and it's, it's what I think designers always want to do. And increasingly the problem is budget and time and just having the cutter fitter who has the, you know, you can carve out the time and you can make sure she's got the time to, or he's got the time to make the pattern and get the fabric and get it in from New York and there's not enough and they have to replace it and then from mood and the, but you know, it's like, and that's just, you know, that's just a tiny taste of all the things it takes. And then suddenly there's a change in the schedule and suddenly they have to make something different for someone else and you need multiples. And suddenly that time for that special thing is gone. And then you have to work on the weekend. You have to get approval. And, you know, it's just like crazy.
And that costume, I'm remembering, because I forgot that we had to have multiples of that 1905 stunning creation because it's written that I get splattered with blood. Right. So how many times did you, well, we had a couple of things, multiple times where we would know what was in the script we were fitting for, but then the next script would come out and oh no, they go and have a blood war.
Something new is happening. Yeah.
Right. We're going to decapitate the thousandth person. And how was that where you would get that news where you're like, oh, so I've now got to get five more of this thing that I got one of because I didn't know?
Well, I learned pretty quickly that it was a bad idea to only use a one-er, especially if you have like a wraparound, if you know, you know, you're ending a scene and starting it and they're not quite sure what's going to happen in the next episode. So I think I learned early on to try to have multiples as often as possible and really only use something that was rental or, you know, some wonderful vintage, whatever, like when I had a very clear sense of the scene and it was already like you saw the whole beginning, middle and end. But yes, I mean, there have been times that there have been a couple, I mean, trying to recreate something as a double is a nightmare, you know, if you need to sort of, I mean, I had to do it on my last show. I had to get fabric printed. You know, that's what you get into this very complicated business and very expensive business. If you're unable to get a double of something and suddenly then you need one, especially if you've already shot something, obviously then you're looking at fabric printing and all kinds of stuff. But, I have to say that luckily I was able to, if it wasn't clear from the script or if we weren't sure what was happening in the wraparound episode or the beginning of the next season, I would do my best to get as much information as I could, be like, so what do you think? Is this, but really I always backed myself up, especially at the end of the season. Like I wouldn't put any of y'all in something singular because I knew that anything could happen in the beginning of the next season. And even if they were like, oh no, it's not going to be, there could be a blood war.
Yeah.
And no one knew until, you know, they were writing months before we got back. So, yeah, I mean, I learned so much about multiples and I'm very multiple aggressive in all of my other shows because of that.
Those, you put that on your resume.
Those lessons.
Your multiple aggressive.
I don't know why I said it that way.
That's so great. Are you kidding me? I love it.
So, yeah, I mean, you know, it's a big thing. I mean, I always feel like it's so irresponsible if a designer just casually uses something that's a single.
Yeah.
Like I just am like, what are you doing? Because it really just screws the whole crew, you know, just screws everybody. And it just means like a huge expense later and a lot of stress.
Oh my God. I've had, you know, situations where I've heard on set where they're like, well, we have to spray with blood, but we only have one of the, you know, the shirt. So aim for face. And I'm like, great.
What?
You know, like this is now what's determining how this looks is because we don't have a thing. And so, you know, having that support from every single department is grateful because it just means everyone can do their job more easily. And then when it does happen, you're happy to accommodate because you know it's not a pattern.
Yeah. Yes. And mm-hmm. always, we would always also have, like, we would say we had four, but we would have five. Because just in case, you know, it's you like they know. Might say we'll do it. And that, you know, but if we, you know, we never want to hold up camera. You never want to screw up the action. You never want to be, you know, for them to be waiting on you. But can I say one, can I tell one funny story about multiples?
Please.
Okay. Yeah. So the best and strongest, most intense lesson I learned about multiples on True Blood was, I think, episode four, when I had just taken over, it might've been five. It was that run where Sookie runs
Virgin
across.
Gothic 90 is on my list.
Okay. So that Virgin, what did you call it? Virgin Gothic.
The Virgin Gothic 90. That's
yes,
title.
The Virgin Gothic 90. So Raelle Tucker had this very intense imagination of how that should look, right? And we know it's just so romance novel, so out there, runny. I mean, incredible. And she had all these ideas, and it was so clear to me what she wanted and what I wanted. And so we started working on it. And the director had some different ideas. And I remember it was sort of like, it was kind of difficult to get there, but ultimately Raelle was able to really convince everyone. And that's when we kind of that, like, you know, then we went crazy with that look. And I mean, I love it so much. And it's just so over the top. And it just, right, it just takes you to a whole other level of storytelling.
Yeah.
It's like you're suddenly in a different show almost. It's like so extreme in a great way, right? Yes. Okay. So there's, I love that look. And then the thing that taught me about multiples. All right. So it's when the first time, okay, it's the time that Sookie goes to Svengtasia and she looks like a snack, right? He says she looks like a snack.
Yes.
She's wearing that white.
Yes. Yeah.
Right.
With the red flowers.
Yes.
No, oh, no, just the white, the white eyelet.
The white eyelet. Right. The white eyelet. It's very like.
Yes. Oh my God. Yes. I know what's coming. Yes.
Okay. And that was the one where basically, I think, do you vomit blood on her? Like, there's a blood cannon. She
long
gets vomited.
Shadow.
On
long
it
shadow.
It explodes, right?
Long shadow was staked, and it was a hose of blood with gallons
buckets.
Going through that
buckets
hose.
And buckets.
Gallons.
And like, and all kinds of nernies, right? Like sticky, like just all this stuff. Okay, so I was so excited and nervous, and it was in the beginning of taking over, right? That was maybe episode five?
Nine.
Maybe it was nine. Thank you. Okay.
I know,
so, you know, I was still getting right. Thank you. I was like, you know, learning how to ride this crazy horse. And I thought we needed like six of those dresses.
Right.
And so I was working with Zandra, our incredible tailor, and made to order person. And she was making the pattern and we were struggling to get all the fabric. And she was really having a hard time because we didn't have the time to make six dresses. And I wasn't yet tuned in to sort of all of that stuff as a young designer. Mm. I was like, I wasn't focused on how much stress it was for her. And it was like, we were so understaffed and we were like working out of a closet. I mean, you know, it was just like the very beginnings. Right. And what happened was that like it really taxed Zandra and she made them beautifully, but it was really hard. Mm. And I remember learning that night, there were only two wigs. And I was like, oh, we can't do it more than twice. I'm sorry, I'm yelling. There's only two wigs. So I was like, uh-huh. Okay. So then I quickly learned, I was like, I'm sorry, Zandra. We only needed probably three, maybe four.
I mean,
and
even
we had
with
made six. And so that was like the beautiful lesson of how to realize what, you know, if the director's like, we need six, and then you have two wigs, you're like, well,
right.
That's where you sort of start to learn how to read the room and understand what's really going to happen on set and, you know, get with the first AD and really like do the little wink, wink and like understand kind of what's really going to happen. So that was the perfect lesson, you know, and I still apologize to Zandra to this day. Because she did such a beautiful job and worked so hard. And then we only, you know, I think we maybe used two.
One thing I think that's interesting that often gets overlooked is that not only are you in charge of what everyone is wearing, you're also in charge when we're not wearing anything or much at all, which is so interesting as a costume designer. And, you know, the various challenges that come with a show where people are in, you know, varying states of undress.
Yes.
And, you know, and what the sort of parameters are. And we talk a lot about how True Blood was, you know, I think doing a really good job in the years previous to intimacy consultants and coordinators and that kind of work. And
And at least from me personally, how much I appreciated the care that you took, that I would have a fitting before a scene that would involve nudity, where you had multiple options of ways that I could be covered up for my comfort, for filming. You know, your team was always right there on set, making sure that we were immediately covered and, you know, never cold for longer than we had to be. And and I think that is such an overlooked part of the costume department and how taken care of as an actor we can feel by someone who takes that kind of, you know, puts that kind of thought in. So I wanted to thank you personally.
Oh, thank you. You're welcome. You're so welcome. I mean, to me, that's, especially on a show like True Blood, that's a huge part of it. You know, my job is to really enable you to do your job, and that, and in those moments, it's about making you feel incredibly safe and comfortable and protected. And, you know, and also, I know I have to say, I have the best team in the world, right? My costume department was like A++. And I feel like all of us came together and had such a strong sense of just that kind of responsibility to our actors, to our characters, to you guys, to, you know, just to make sure that we did everything we can to make it feel, to make a very strange situation feel as okay as possible, at least from our end, you know, that you had what you needed in terms of coverage, whatever that meant. And you knew that someone would be right there for you, right? That was just, I felt like the least we could do. And I, yes, you're right. It's so different now that there are intimacy coordinators, because I feel like up until recently, that was really the purview of the costume department.
Yeah.
Really? Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, in terms of, to a certain extent, I think that you all sort of handled it most of all, right? Mm-hmm. With the other actor and that you figured out with the director, but probably there's a lot of intimate conversations about how to do stuff before, previously. And then we kind of stood by and made sure everyone had what they needed.
Yeah.
I mean, now intimacy coordinators, they come with like a giant duffel bag with like yoga, like pieces of yoga stuff and different pillows. And like, it's incredible, all the gear that's now part of that. Yeah. That I think is really great. But anyway, it was, it always felt like really, I took it really seriously to get as much as we could to make everything feel as okay as possible for the scene. And yeah, there's so many crazy options, and we made so many things on our own that, you know, that would fit better or stick better or work better. Yeah.
Well, products that didn't exist that now maybe do because of all the experimentation that happens in shows like this.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
It's a very interesting, you know, I'm sort of known to have a lot of blood experience and a lot of like sexy time coverage experience.
Right.
And I feel very confident in those two areas. Whenever I have to do it, I'm like, okay, we got this. Don't worry about it. This is how we're going to do it, you know? And that's fun to have that's fun to have that in my wheelhouse.
I'll take us home with two things. One is a statement and then a question. The statement is, just for that little fun fact and aside, is that Joe Manganiello was generous enough to sign his cock sock. Now that is a technical term.
Is a technical term.
That was supplied to me by the costume department, an extra one that he did not wear. We thought that was, you know, better. And he signed it. And I auctioned it for $1,200 to save elephants.
That's great.
There's a pun in there that I'm not going to touch.
Right. We won't go near it. Figure it out.
We'll just move right along. Everyone was very generous all the way along. So we've been asking everyone, Audrey, which you may know because you've, you know, heard the podcast, it seems, but we ask everyone when they think of their experience of True Blood and being on the show and all that it entailed, to think of three words that come to mind about your experience.
Okay. Three words. Okay. I would say creativity, teamwork, and family. I know. I'm sorry they're not just adjectives, but I think that's, and you know, I hadn't thought about, I forgot about the three words. Shoot, I normally would have sort of scribbled some down, but I think that says it, because I feel like I could be more creative with more support, and I had the best team in the world, and they're like family to me. And also all of you guys are like family to me. I mean, you know, the sort of family that we built up, I mean, just this, what we're doing right now is indicative of these bonds, you know, that are still so present. I mean, I just did a huge show with, you know, three people from True Blood.
Sunday, Leslie. I was like, oh my God, it's like a reunion.
Yeah. Sunday, Leslie, Sarah, and Suzuki.
And Suzuki.
I mean, it was a dream.
Oh my gosh.
Yes. Amazing. And also Christine, she was a shopper. So it's like my professional life as a costume designer started with that family, and that family still supports me. And it's my dream to work with those people over and over again, because we have such an incredible vocabulary and understanding and respect for each other that came from the top, right? Came from Alan.
Yeah.
Such a treat to catch up and such get a little treat. More insight. I hope people listening at home have a little, you know, clearer picture of really what you brought to this series that they love.
Oh gosh, I could talk forever.
Yeah, we are right now. We talk like we've been doing this podcast, and we just talk and talk about it to this incredible family. And we hear that word a lot. Yeah. We hear people say family a lot, and it always makes me weepy.
I know. And I have to say too, the amount of like love and respect for the costumes and sort of this like incredible bond we have from me helping you guys create characters, my humble help that I've been able to offer. Like, it means so much to hear other actors too talk about it, you know, that it was helpful. Like that just is like, that's why I do it, you know.
That's it.
That's the absolute joy of the job.
Well, thank you so much.
You're the best of the best of the best.
You guys are. Thank you.
How incredible is it to speak to Audrey again? And just, I don't know. Yeah. Whenever we have people on, especially the crafts people of this show, I always relish the opportunity to just thank them for what they did to make this show so spectacular.
Yeah, my relationship with Audrey is so intricate to my True Blood experience. Like, I it's interwoven, right? It's just part of the same fabric. So, pun intended. So it's, my heart is overflowing. My words won't work. Yeah. That was so special to me to get to talk to her.
Well, I'll say, I found in an interview, she talked about Pam as being Vampire Barbie, which I think not only works for your general aesthetic in the show, but also just the fun, I think, that you and Audrey had in creating that character, that it really was playing dress up and, you know, enjoying every facet of that. So,
and we had that every wardrobe fitting. I could have talked to her for hours about, I'm thinking of all the things I didn't get to say, like how she hemmed the Walmart sweatsuit to be the most awkward length possible with the elastic at the bottom, and how she knows how I put on jeans that are too tight. You know, that embarrassing weird walk that I had to do. She's just, I'm all aglow.
Phenomenal.
And next week on Truest Blood, we are talking to one of our favorite actors, Dennis O'Hare.
Yes.
I really believe that he is probably one of the greatest actors, if not the greatest actor, of our time. There are few artists in the world with talent like his. And his portrayal of King Russell Edgington is so fantastic. It's just an example of how an actor can elevate a character. So be sure to tune in. This man holds the key to the secrets of great acting.
Well, thanks for listening, Truebies. Subscribe and follow wherever you listen to your podcasts. And we'll see you next week.
Y'all come back now, you hear?
Truest Blood is produced by Safe Haven for HBO. Executive producers are Janina Gavankar, Kristen Bauer, and Deborah Ann Wool. Our producer is Gabrielle Galan, and our audio producer is Christopher Wool. Our theme song was recorded just for this podcast by Jace Everett. Additional music was composed by Timo Chen. And remember, you can watch all of the original episodes of True Blood on Max.